You're listening to Midnight Radio Show on Radio Free Brooklyn.
You can get anything you want there. I mean, any kind of exotic moonflower, a sunflower. You could get any kind of engine part you could possibly need for your ship.
I've only been in the JY for like 2 years, and I don't even think that I have a favorite JY memory so much as maybe the JY memory I'm the most embarrassed about. Like, all right. So I got a job working for this boot counterfeiter gang, and they had about like four operations that were basically 3D printing all of these different boots that were coming from all of these different planets. And I'd been there for about, 2 months, like, kind of kept to myself, like really like working hard, like doing triples. And so we had a staff party because, you know, it was like the second son. So like we got to have a staff party, or, you know, they want us to feel like we're like a family, even though like we're like a gang of, you know, like kind of crusty mercenary shoe counterfeiters. And they have us go off to this crazy bat cave out in the hills. Like it's this like, and it's like, you know, it's this time of year, so all the leaves are red and the mist is hanging really low, and we're just like eating fistfuls of Gorlax. Like there was like a jar of this stuff, and we're just eating fistfuls of it, and we're drinking shams, and it's just like so silly. But we're like rolling around in big piles of leaves, and the mist is coming in, and it's all hosted by this weird, skinny, like 700-year-old harrow. Like, and I don't even know. Like, this harrow had easily two widow's peaks, and they probably had like a third widow's peak, but that was like time. Oh, did you run out of?
No.
Oh, you said
We're bouncing all over the galaxy. We was in the jail just last week. Where will we fly to next? Pick a point on the map. Anywhere you want to go. You're listening to Midnight Radio Show. Transmissions. Coming to you live from wherever we may be to whenever this finds you on some fine and fantastical evening. It's always midnight somewhere in the vasty endlessness of space and time. Where did we leave off in our story? I believe far, far away in another world, we had been recounting the adventures and misadventures of a couple of princes, Chaz and Shamsa. We may have forgotten all about them. It's been some time, lost in yarns and sidetracking and sidewinding. Do enjoy some sidewinding. A story within a story, within a show, within a radio show, within a galaxy. Where were we with Chaz and Shamsa? They were very brave, had excellent manners. We saw them begin their quest. They got the message. They got the prophecy. The phoenix came to them, told them to guard the orb. And the birds sent them off in different directions so as to hopefully be more likely to succeed in their varying quests. One big quest that equals save the world. I mean, they better save the world.
Safe for everyone. is this anyway? Is it yours to say? What do you want from this? What are you saving for yourself? Who are you saving it for? How many pieces will there be? If it falls apart, how many pieces will there be? How many pieces could you keep? How many pieces could you keep? Could you keep the piece? Could you keep the piece? Please do it for me. Save the world for me.
Together so tightly, so close, just molecules crammed and bits of soul, just all one. And then creation happened, and everything split apart into billions and millions and millions and billions and gazillions of different things. We're all so far apart, so spread across space, and space suddenly existed. But when you find people, you can imagine that your tiny little broken glass piece of soul that's inside you and their tiny, beautiful little broken glass bit of soul that's inside them, perhaps they were nearby the beginning of time when all things were one thing, and perhaps that jagged little edge of yours and that jagged little edge of theirs, it just fits back together. One step closer to wholeness. Completion. Speaking of love, do believe that Prince Shanza loved the world Shah, her knights, the people, the castle at Calvax, their home base. When we left off last in our story, she had ridden bravely back to Calvax to organize the people to keep a watch on the skies, because they were coming. They are coming, she told them. And they kept a watch on the skies, but then they came. And they came and they took the orb, and there was a horrible, huge storm that just ate up the land and froze everything, and Shanza was buried in ice, and the knights that could escape, they escaped, they took to the skies, and Chaz, oh my goodness, well, Chaz, he had set off from his very delectable interaction with the dragon, up in her cave, and she had bade him to find three things, but I don't think that she ever told us what those three things were. Thank goodness Chaz knows. And so he had headed off on his quest, and he traveled far and wide, high and low, and eventually he came to a beautiful pond where he was to find a specific lucky penny that had been thrown into this pond, because it was a bit of a wishing well, the local people felt. And here he encountered some very large frogs. They stared at him, their giant eyes blinking as they watched him, gazing into the water, looking for a sparkle among the mud that would be that lucky penny he had been sent to find. So, finally, he asked one of the frogs, the largest of the frogs, like almost as high as his knee. He asked, bowing first, of course, very polite prince, you know. He bowed to the froggy, and then he said, "Excuse me, Mr. Frog, I have been sent here to find a very specific lucky penny, and it seems that this might be your home, and it seems that this being your home, I should probably ask you if I might be able to beg or borrow or somehow earn the right to the access to this lucky penny." Frog. Ribbit. Ribbit. So finally Chaz turned to the smallest of the frogs, and he repeated his request. And the smallest of the frogs said, "Ribbit. Ribbit. What will you give us in exchange for such a treasure?" Chaz had already given all of his jewelry away to the dragon. He had no rings on his fingers anymore, and no beads in his hair anymore, and, no necklace around his neck anymore. So he felt about in his pockets, and he found a handkerchief. So he offered the handkerchief to the littlest of the frog, who was very pleased with it, and immediately proceeded to make a small turban for himself out of the handkerchief. It looked very dashing, very becoming. Ribbit. And, ribbit. And so, after some time of fussing about with the handkerchief and trying it as a sarong and a scarf and an arm wrap, finally, the smallest of the frogs gave the handkerchief to the largest of the frogs, who put it in his mouth, and then the tiny little frog leapt into the water of the pond, disappeared into the murky, shallow depths. But after some time, he returned and he had with him a much eroded, but still quite pretty and shiny, lucky penny. And he presented Prince Chaz with the lucky penny. But as Prince Chaz turned to go, quite pleased that this had actually been relatively easy, the little frog said, "Before you take that penny, you should know that every penny in the pond here was someone's wish. And since every single penny that entered the pond was somebody's wish, then it really belongs to the person who threw it in the first place. That penny that you hold there, it was the wish of a beautiful princess." And Chaz, well, beautiful princess with a wish, it sounded like just the sort of thing that he would be up for. But the little frog shook his head. "The beautiful princess did not wish for a handsome prince or any of that jazz, so I don't know if you'll be able to grant her wish, but know that you carry it with you as long as you do. And if you come across the princess, you might have to help her out. I think that's how this works."
"Well, will you tell me her name or what her wish was?"
"Oh, no. I think that she'll find you. But off you go. That's enough." And with that, he leapt back into the pond and was not seen. And so Chaz continued on his merry way.
can we expect her to arrive in this story? I don't know, but I probably will soon. Even if I don't find out, I think that would still be cool, 'cause I will make it up in my head, and I'll start from the beginning. This princess with the lucky, lucky penny. I don't know, but I probably will find out soon. And even if I don't, I will spend the afternoon just wondering. Just wondering about who.
When you travel to the caves, thank you.
by stomping. You must wear clothing that does not jingle or jangle. There's no need to bring a lantern, for the chrysanthemum crystals themselves, they glow pink and white and red. Glow. In fact, it's recommended to bring a scarf to cover your eyes when you sleep, for it is light there all the time. When you travel to the forest at Halling, the Halling Forest, it's important to bring gifts. Baubles and trinkets, shiny objects. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. A button or two will often do. But the fairy is native to the forest at Halling. They love shiny things, bright things. To please them, it is best to dress in bright colors. To decorate oneself with shiny things, as long as you have enough to share and trade. Shiny little objects, you could live very well for long. For all the creatures of the forest would take you in. And boy, to all of their nests and palaces and cottages just sparkle beads, with baubles. It's quite a sight. If you travel to the Khatir Mountains, you best be prepared to sleep. For here, high in the mountains, lurk all the things that love to sleep. Giants, jungle cats, volcanoes, and the bear in the winter. Swimming or flying from world to world. The
the owls keep a stronghold here. And there's a sloth sanctuary. Yes, that's the sleepy place. And on the other side? Well, I don't think anyone's ever gone to the other side and come back to tell about it. Mostly they just get lost in the mountains. And they sleep, and then they come home again eventually. To wherever they're from. Down the plains, beaches, and the green, green forests. I would think it would be the pole or the other side of the world. Perhaps it's a shortcut to the northern hemisphere. Perhaps it's a whole other country that none of us have ever heard of before. The other side of the world. If you travel to the beaches, you really need a canoe and an umbrella. Every local pastime involves either a canoe or an umbrella, or, in many cases, both. So much time on the JY, but it's true now we're spending some time on Shaw, a little more time on Shaw, all these places that we've been telling you about tonight. It's all Shaw, Northern Hemisphere, great beautiful landmass lined with a crooked smiling beach from ear to ear. Surrounded by forests and lakes, villages and towns. And then all the way to the north, it's the Mia Moa Mountains. Great big mountain range. And in the southern hemisphere, it's the land of Hollingsterway. Giant island, a continent, I suppose, at that scale, shaped roughly like a cat's head, and mountains are the ears. So they call them the Katir Mountains, actually, because of this, because of the view from outer space looking down on that continent. Smile, Cheshire Cat smile. Well, it's the capital, but the capital is actually a very long, skinny sort of city. It's actually a wall that goes from one end of the land and the beach to the other. And all of the towns are just continuously sort of strung up along it. Great caravan, still yet always moving. There's a great lake. It reaches one triangular paw close
close to the sea, but the rest is deep in the forest, mainland. And in it, they say there lives a whale, or something as big as a whale. Not a whale per se, but a giant lake creature that just could eat a house whole if it chose to, but it's benevolent, it's sweet and darling. Never hurt anyone. In fact, it protects us, they say. They say it protects us. It came from the stars, and it chose to make its home here in the lake and protect the people of Hollingsterway. And people love it, and they revere it, and they give it festivals sometimes. And they swim without fear, dangling their fingers and toes into the water with only love and trust. And when it swims near the surface and they see the grand vastness of its body, they smile and they call out to it. Listening to Midnight Radio Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. Tune in next time.
Listening to Midnight Radio Show on Radio Free Brooklyn.
I don't really have a craziest JY story, but I definitely have one that I'm still embarrassed by. Okay, so about, I got this job right when I moved in, working for this boot counterfeiter and plagiarizer gang. But they had about like 3 brick and mortar stores set up all along the JY that were 3D printing boots from different parts of time, you know, downloading historical documents from different societies, you know, the whole thing. And we're just printing these things. We're printing the boots fast, and then they can print the money to pay him for them. And they have, it's like nearing second son. And I've only been there for 2 months, but I kept to myself. But like people like me, you know, I'm likable, or at least I try to perceive, you know, make myself be perceived as likable, which is, you know, half the battle. And so I get invited to go to the second son party. It's like a big staff party, but they want me to come even though I'm new and like, you know, show me around. And we get there and it is a giant granite bat cave. Like, no, this thing is out like in the middle of the Southern Marches, and then there's just this beautiful granite like bump, and it's just an enormous bat cave. But it's got all the, you know, and it's like near second, it's that time of year where there's just the red leaves and the low mist, and it's just this goofy giant like drunken party cookout. Like, we're, like, grabbing fistfuls of Snorlax and, like, chasing it down with chimps. And there's just, like, jars of Snorlax everywhere. I mean, this was, like, you know, I know these are rough guys, but this was crazy. I mean, this was, like, you know, easily, like, 24 Mendos of just pure Snorlax. Like, I couldn't even afford that with my job. And so we're just, like, but it's, like, hey, man, have fun. And there's the whole party captain is this giant 600-year-old Harrow. And this Harrow is, like, has, like, they got, like, the two widow's peaks in the front and, like, the one, you know how they're, like, like our space-time doesn't catch up to them, so they got that other widow's peak. They had that. I mean, it was amazing. And he insisted on us riding on this ridiculous contraption. I mean, this looked like one of those things. You know, when people go, you know, they go to like the freezing idol, and they go out to the freezing idol, and everyone like wears the special costumes and things. This was like that. This was like, it had like all these like blinky lights and torches and things on it. And he said that what we had to do was each of us had to get up there and do a swamp dance. And I was like, I didn't say anything. But so they start, you know, and he's working like, you know, 15 different levers, and we're going forward, and, you know, basically the hero would make it so that, you know, that the whole machine would stop and we would be dead in the water, and then he'd be like, well, you know what you gotta do is you gotta do the dance. And he would just sat there being like, you gotta do the dance. And there were like, I would say that like, you know, and he played some sexy music, came along. And, you know, I could see he was nudging the levers to make it so that, you know, we were kind of tilting into the water. People were getting scared. And it was 50% Glebs and 50% Sharmas. And so I could tell he wanted the Glebs to dance. He wanted the Glebs to dance. This was like this whole thing. But he's like, any of the Sharmas want to go? And he didn't. I mean, you know, I got tentacles. That night I had 9 tentacles. I mean, there was just the big one. And so I get up there and I start my swizzle. And before I even realize it, he's trying to make it look like it doesn't, you know, it's not working because I'm not a Gleb, you know, and I'm just being like some Sharma with like all my tentacles everywhere. And he starts moving the lever, making it like so we're gonna crash again. And I, you know me, I've been working high pressure conditions. Without even realizing, I grab the lever out of his hand and a right us and throw the second Capos Martha into one of the incinerators. And everything turns into pink smoke. I mean, like, in the incinerator. And the whole thing smells like burnt marshmallows. And everyone's running around screaming. And meanwhile, the guy's, he doesn't know whether to make it look like it's crashing or whether to save it. And everyone's like, what's going on? And they just grab the guy. And they're like, start blaming him for setting fire to the Marta. And I'm standing there, and they're just like, you caught him. You did it. And I'm like, oh, my God. They're like, you did it. And you got some tentacle moves, man. You got some tentacle moves. They went home, and they printed me 49 different pairs of rainbow boots. You know, the ones that make the sound when I swish? But I gotta say, I've been seeing this guy, and his next-door neighbor is totally the pilot. So that's a little awkward. Like I said, I don't have a best JY story, but I got one that I'm most embarrassed about right now, and that's it.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
and the movement of things. That's what we're doing, even though it's easy to forget because we're enjoying traveling from one hub to the next, visiting with all our friends and throwing down. We're all moving things. You know, I came here to visit with y'all on the hub. Because I had to deliver this fuchsia fake fur. Oh, I mean, once they get a hold of you, then they say, well, you're just here, you're just going from here to there, you better just take this thing with you for me, would you now? Speaking of which, can I have my receipt? Okay, now that we got that out of the way. Kabow.
Kablamo. Ah, oh, you guys have changed so much since a year.
Have we?
Have we?
Last year we made the music live, reading off your script.
Yeah.
It was all, and there was no electro music bumps.
Yeah.
It is like 100 different. Right. It's so good, but I'm like, oh my god, it's so different. They're like, we have maps of the world. I'm like, fucking maps of the world? What do you mean there's map? What? He's like, oh no, we refer to here. It's like, you have Star Wars universe, you have Dungeons and Dragons galaxies, this role playing game on your, in your stage room. I don't know what this is, you know, stage theater room.
In the stage room.
There's castle wall and galaxies. You even have shadow fairies that are sad in their own gloomy, unlucky planet.
More unlucky than a clutch of shadow fairies.
What's the name of this planet?
That one's Xenon.
And what's the scary black one?
That's the sun, but we can't see Mo-Rev. Mo-Rev, where all the nightmares of the galaxy are stored.
I was born in Mo-Rev. Grew up in Mo-Rev. Yeah. But. What? But. It. Ah. But. Oh.
Oh. Oh.
Was just a friend.
Oh. Oh.
A little place in the galaxy.
Oh.
All other people have been.
Oh.
And if I've been there once before, it didn't mean I've been. There's a fella.
Oh.
There's a fella.
Oh.
Don't choke yourself now, darling. You're listening to the Midnight Radio Show.
On Radio Free Brooklyn.
That was awesome. That was fucking sweet.
Vocal synth bass.